That's great introduction of Brother Teo. Brother Teo Kian Kun, I just read, graduated from the University of Malaya in Civil Engineering in 1979. He has been a spiritual practitioner and meditator since 1971. Since his retirement in 2001 from his engineering career, he has been sharing his spiritual understanding and experiences with all those who are keen in their search for true happiness, peace, liberation from birth and death, and all mental suffering to become a more virtuous, nobler, and wiser human being. It is Brother Teo's hope that Dharma friends, spiritual practitioners, seekers of truth, and cultivators will be able to make use of his sharing of the truth to develop a better understanding of life, to help others, and be of great blessing to all humanity. He had also counseled and helped many people with severe depression, karmic condition, career, health, marriage, financial separation, and relationship problems, to recover beautifully via his sharing of the rather penetrative Dharma truth taught by the Buddha with them. He gives Dharma talks, conducts Dharma meditation classes, and meditation retreats at various meditation centers and places that invite him. Brother Teo conducts weekly meditation and Dharma classes at Wu Pin Chin Sia, a Mahayana Vihara every Sunday, and at Subang Jaya every Thursday. He also conducts a weekly Dharma sharing discussion class with a group of very serious spiritual friends every Tuesday night at his Petaling Jaya SS2 residence. Brothers and sisters, let's put a palm together and welcome Brother Teo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, thank you so much for the kind introduction. A very good morning to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we meet again. Last year I was here twice. So this year, 2020, I'm here again. Today's topic is something different. As you can see on the whiteboard, I have chosen this topic, understanding the essential Dhamma of Lord Buddha. Well, this is a very important topic. As Buddhists, the least we should develop is the understanding of the Buddha's teaching. And out of the Buddha's teaching, these essential Dhammas are the very important ones. So today I will try my best to share with you this understanding so that hopefully by the end of this session you can develop clearer understanding of the Buddha's essential Dhamma. This essential Dhamma, most people who don't have the clear understanding, they teach them as separate Dhammas. But when you have the clear understanding, they are all interconnected, related, and they are applicable to life. And once you understand them, you put them into cultivation, then you realize the essence, it will transform your life. Personality-wise, character-wise, understanding-wise, and virtue-wise, you become completely transformed for the better. And you want to change your life, improve your life, you don't need money on all this so-called feng shui or whatever. Not really important. More important is understand this teaching. And like the Buddha said, our entire life depends on karma. Under the 5 daily contemplation, the last contemplation, the Buddha said, we are all, whether human being or living being, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So you don't take care of karma and you go and believe all those things and do all those things, it is not going to give you the real solution. The real solution is whether you guys take care of karma or not. So if karma is the main deciding factor, then this is a very powerful understanding. That's why the Buddha began his teaching by reciting this stanza. Then he explained to the monks and the lay people at that time. He said, if we take care of karma, karma will take care of our life. Then it will help you develop the good life, the noble life. So today, I will focus on this topic, then hopefully you will have a very good understanding. Okay? So the Buddha start off with a very, very wide range of understanding because of his unique nature. He is not only enlightened, he is a fully enlightened being. This enlightenment brings forth the great understanding, the deep penetrative understanding after eons and eons of cultivation, almost 3¾ eons. And because of that, he was able to summarize all of life into very simple teachings, or what he called truth. That's why the essence of his teaching is just the Four Noble Truths, and they arise through that unique understanding of his. So first of all, the Buddha said, our universe, our cosmic entity, the whole of existence, he called it nature. I write it down. He said, there is nature. That, number two, there are laws that governs nature. So in order to understand life, he said, you have to understand what nature is and what are the laws that governs nature. And this law he has realized through his enlightenment. He called it the Pancha Niyamas. So this Pancha Niyama is also called the Five Universal Order of Nature. They are very easy to understand. He said the first two are scientific law. Scientific law. And this scientific law of nature, the first one he called it the Uttu Niyama. And Uttu Niyama is the physical law of nature. All physical things, like physics, etc., they follow this law. Newton's law, action and reaction, they follow this law. Second one is Bija Niyama. Bija Niyama is the biological order. Of nature. So biological order of nature means all of organic things like plants, fishes, human beings, everything that has organic thing, they follow this law. That's why the scientists, after they have understood these two laws, they progress very fast. That's the reason why you look at our civilization over the past maybe 50 or 60 years. We progress very fast because the scientists penetrated this too long. Whereas the Buddha is more interested in the next three, which are the spiritual law of nature. So these spiritual law are the three very important understanding. The first one is law of karma, or the Buddha called it karma niyama. The second one is citta niyama, law of the mind. And the last one is dhamma niyama. Law of truth, or dhamma, as taught by the Buddha. So once he realized these five great law, his focus is spiritual law. That's why he is a Samasa Buddha, because he is an expert in physical law. He is very good. So just from this first right view, these three are the right understanding of the spiritual law. So he called it right view. When you understand how they function, means you have right view. You understand how the universal nature's law operate, just like the scientists. When you can understand them, you can progress very fast. You can become enlightened. So this first law of karma, or karma niyama, the first right view speed off his teaching. That's why his essential dhamma, essence of the Buddha's teaching, essence of Buddha's teaching. It's the Four Noble Truths. Four Noble Truths I have already spoken in the previous two sessions last year. I went into it quite detail, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. You go and listen to that one, so that I have enough time to cover today's topic. Otherwise, I don't have enough time. Okay? But I can summarize to you what this Four Noble Truths is. The first Noble Truth, the Buddha said, is the noble truth of suffering or dukkha. To the Buddha, he realized in this existential world, as long as we go through life, you will encounter the realities of life. Means everything within life, if you don't have the Dhamma understanding, when you encounter them, you will suffer, is it? Means the prevalence of suffering. And he mentioned the eight conditions which we have gone through. You go and listen and read up on your own. Started off with birth, old age, sickness, and death, followed by the other four. Then he not only tell you that there is this first noble truth of dukkha, prevalence of suffering. Under the second noble truth, he said there is a cause behind all suffering. Because of your lack of understanding of these three spiritual law, the right view. That's why you develop the self-delusion, attachment, craving, clinging, and you grasp at the five aggregate of form and mind. And the cause of suffering is craving. Very simple, very straightforward. Then after that, he said, suffering need not be under the third noble truth. enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized. So that is the most important aspect of his teaching. Human beings need not suffer. That's why in my sharing I used to tell Kayamitas, in this world there is no such thing as a problem. Of course everybody will disagree because you have gone through career, you have gone through life, so much suffering. The Buddha also say under the first noble truth, the noble truth of suffering. Then why do you say no suffering? But I use the word. Technically, in this world, when you understand the teaching, there is no such thing as suffering. Why is there suffering? Why are you unhappy, miserable, not peaceful? That is the question you have to ask. You have to inquire deep. The best way to understand is, for the time being, forget about the first two noble truths first. Just ask yourself, why did you suffer? You suffer because you lack understanding and you perceive whatever happened with negativity, with fear, with worry, with anxiety. Then you develop sorrow, lamentation, unhappiness, deep resentment until you went into depression. Because that thing that troubles you, you worry about it. You cling on to it, you grasp onto it, you hold on to it. You want to resolve it, you cannot resolve it because you lack understanding. You lack the understanding of this teaching. So because of that, technically there is no such thing as a problem if you perceive everything that happened according to what the Buddha teach. Thing is just the way it is. Means condition already set. When condition is such, things will be such. So this understanding is very important. So what I need to do is whatever happened, I accept the reality first. Then I ask myself the question, what actually happened? What is the so-called problem in inverted comma? When I don't perceive it with negativity, then I am at peace. I don't fear, I don't worry, I don't project my thought, I don't develop all the negativity of mind. That's why I am at peace. But these things still need to be resolved. Then I ask myself, how can I resolve this so-called situation or issue or inverted comma, the problem, amicably, so that nobody gets hurt, so that it can be resolved amicably for the good of the many. So when you look at it that way, then you go back to the teaching, then you realize the teaching teach you how to free the mind. That's why the Buddha spoke the fourth noble truth. He said, under the fourth noble truth, he teach you the way out of suffering. He said, if you cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, means enlightenment in the here and now. And all your problems will be solved. That is the power of his teaching. That is what noble eightfold path is all about. So this four noble truths, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, spin off. From here, it spin off all the essential Dhamma. So noble eightfold path, there are eight path factors which are all very noble. When you realize them, cultivated them, and you have the understanding, you become a noble one. Noble ones are enlightened ones because they are very noble in all aspects of life. They are very noble in their understanding of life because they have right view. They are very noble in the way they conduct themselves. They have right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood or right living. They live life in accordance with the law of nature. They don't violate them. Then they have right effort to constantly purify, to constantly improve their thought process, the way they conduct themselves, communicate with people, and the way they live their life. Then after that, they develop training of mind to be mindful, to be heedful, to be aware, so that they can see things clearly, see things as they are, awaken, realize the truth. Then finally, they develop samadhi. When mindfulness stabilizes, it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is the mind state that is unwavering, collected. So that at the moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile feel, or think of something, your mind does not stir, does not waver. There is no reaction and stirring of mind. There is no fear. Means it can see things as they are. How the phenomena move, and how it conditions the mundane mind into delusion, negativity, and condition your suffering. That's why when you see all this, you see the Buddha's teaching. You see how the nature's law operate and function, how your mind operate or function. Then how all the essential Dhamma, which is the Dhamma that he has taught, operate. And when they stand up to investigation, you have this, what they call joy, happiness, faith, very strong. So with this understanding, we can come in with the first right view. The first right view is karma niyama. So like the Buddha has already explained under the five daily contemplation, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. So karma is almost the controlling factor. Your life entirely depends on karma. Well, you're born of it. You inherit everything that you create through the karmic process. Then every moment, every instant, you are conditioned by it. And this life, every life you come, you are what you are because of your karma. So if you take care of karma, you take care of life. Then you have good life, you have beautiful life. And life is just so simple. When you understand, you know how to free. From this right view, the Buddha came out with his teaching. Dhammapada verse 1, 2, 183, 21, 22, and 23. So these are the first aspect of the essential Dhamma. So essential Dhamma starts from here. Yeah? Four noble truths, spin off the essential Dhamma. So Dhammapada verse 183 is based on the right view with respect to law of karma. That's why the Buddha said, all Buddhas when they come, they will teach the same. They will advise you the same. So this famous saying is also written on the gate behind your SJBA entrance. The Buddha said, Sabba papasa akaranang, kusalesa upasan padan, sacitta pariyotapadang, etang buddhana sasana. And the meaning is very simple. To take care of karma, he said, you have to avoid all evil. When you avoid all evil, you do not commit karmic negativity. And your life is much, much better. Okay? Then he said, whatever wholesomeness, kusala, wholesomeness, you must do. Then finally, purify your mind. So we go into this tree. Yeah? Avoid all evil. How do you avoid all evil? Huh? How to avoid all evil? What have you learned? He says, Sabba papasa, no, means all evil, no, you have to avoid. So this one is a very important question. How do you avoid all evil? Just now the monk administer what to you? Huh? You chant Panadipata Viharamani Sikha Padang Samadhi Yami. What is that? five precepts. You know why? Eh? The five precepts can allow you to avoid all major evil. That's how the essential Dhamma comes about, the precepts. So this one, five precepts is minimum for lay people. If you want to be more virtuous, you go for eight. That is during training. Don't get the Buddha wrong. Then if you want to become a monk, you have 227. You become nun, 300 something. But don't have to go so far. Five precepts is very sufficient. The Buddha say all these precepts, you analyze them, they constitute major evils. If you violate them, you commit evil. Take for example the first precept. What is it? What is the meaning of Panatipata Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhi Yami? I undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. Don't just chant without understanding. Then you don't learn. Do you understand? So, you undertake the training rule. That word, training rule, is very important. Means you train yourself to have mindfulness, to have sati, to be heedful, so that you can keep this precept and abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. Who kill? Who cause harm? Violent people? True or not? Angry people? Selfish people? Deluded people? The three evil roots are all there. That's why the next category of essential Dhamma is the three evil roots. Of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's how the teaching come about. Then you check the second precept. We undertake the training rule to abstain from stealing or taking things that doesn't belong to us. Who steal? Who misappropriate things? Selfish people, deluded people, greedy people. Again, the evil roots are there. Then the third precept, abstain from sexual misconduct. Who will do that? Lustful people, selfish people, greedy people, deluded people. Again, it's the same. Then the fourth precept, who will tell lies? Who will come up with all the four wrong type of speeches? Deluded people, selfish people, violent people, angry people. Again, the three evil roots are there. Then the last precept is abstain from partaking intoxicant, drugs, alcohol, or whatever that can affect your consciousness. Because when your consciousness is affected, you become heedless. And the Buddha said, you will break all the first four precepts. That is the danger of not keeping to the fifth precept. So all these have evil mental intention of the three evil roots behind. Greed, hatred, and delusion. That's how the teaching comes about. That's why when you can keep or cultivate these five precepts, you can avoid major evil. So this one, to avoid major evil, you have to cultivate the five precepts. Then how do you cultivate virtue? Goodness, the second advice. How? How do you cultivate virtue? Goodness? Just now I told you that. The fourth noble truth is the noble eightfold path, isn't it? Okay, maybe we go down from here. This one is the five precept. So, noble, eightfold path. Okay? So, when you cultivate noble, eightfold path factor, after the first right view, which is right understanding of these three spiritual law, the second one is right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Combine the four right effort. That one, the second to the sixth path factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, that one can help you to cultivate wholesomeness. So out of the Noble Eightfold path factor, two to six, can help you cultivate wholesomeness. Or virtue. So you look at the essential Dhamma. From Dhammapada, verse 183, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion come into play. Then the five precepts come into play. Then Noble Eightfold Path factor 2 to 6 can help you cultivate virtue. Then the last one is what? Purifying your mind. Purifying your mind is actually the combination, combination of path factor 1, 7, and 8. Purification of mind. To purify your mind, the Buddha said the first very important mind state that you have to develop is heedfulness. Heedfulness is the most important. According to Dhammapada verse 21, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die. The heedless are as if dead. So if you don't have heedfulness, which is another essential Dhamma, you cannot develop meditation. You cannot purify your mind. That's why heedfulness is very important. And Dhammapada verse 21, 22, and 23, they are the first three of the 20 Appamada Vaga. Appamada is heedfulness. So this heedfulness is most important. Appamada. That's why to be heedful, Dhammapada verse 23 defines it very clearly. The constantly meditative, ever mindful. And if you hold on to these two cultivations steadfastly, you will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. Guaranteed. So to be ever mindful, you need to train your mind to be mindful first. Stabilize it until it's ever mindful. That's why in the midst of life, you are still mindful, the daily mindfulness. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha leading to the enlightenment. That's why constantly meditative. So all these teachings fall into place. All these are essential Dhamma. Then after that, we come to Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. The famous twin verse. The Buddha said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So if you are heedless, If you do not train your mind to have heedfulness, you will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then what happened? The Buddha says suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follows the hoof of the cart. If you want to suffer, continue to be heedless. No need to train your mind. Then don't blame anybody for your misery, for your life destiny, which is very, very negative and full of suffering and misery. Whereas the opposite twin verse, Dhammapada verse 2, is the complementary opposite verse. And this one is very important, the Buddha said. If you understand the teaching and you determine to make a change to your life, then you must train your mind to be heedful, to be aware, to be mindful. And then you will act, speak, and think with a pure mind, wholesome mind, heedful mind, that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. If you do that, the Buddha says, happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. Which one do you choose? Dhammapada verse 1 or 2? Simple question, eh? Which one do you choose? You choose to be happy or miserable? Don't tell me you don't know how to choose. I think a lot of you still require, choose to be unhappy. Otherwise, life got no meaning. You want to be tormented, only life got meaning. Otherwise, too boring. But I don't feel it that way. To me, I saw so many people suffer. In fact, suffering, like the Buddha said, is everywhere, prevalence of suffering. But living beings just don't understand why they suffer and how they suffer. And they suffer without knowing that they are suffering. They still blame people. That guy lah. Or my boss lah. Or my spouse lah. My children. I spend so much money on them. I did so many things for them. And yet they caused this problem to me. This is all delusion, anger, hatred. By getting angry, fearful, will it solve your problem? It won't solve your problem. You continue to perceive life with negativity. You continue to blame others. You are not able to see your own ignorance, delusion, lack of understanding. You are not able to understand this teaching, the essential Dhamma. So now I teach you how to come out of it. The Buddha said to understand his spiritual teaching, you need five things. The spiritual faculties. That's why here you have the five spiritual faculties. And do you know what they are? What they are? Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. You have it in your slide actually, up there. Oh no, now different slide already. So Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. What is Sadda? Faith in the Buddha and his teaching. You must have faith. Otherwise, you will have fear. You will have doubt. Your mind is not composed, not calm. That's why faith in the Buddha and his teaching is very important. And you must develop it through an understanding of who the Buddha is, how wonderful a being he is. He was able to realize all this and share with us free. That's why you must have gratitude towards him, respect towards him. And his teaching is so powerful. Not only can allow you to have the understanding to liberate your mind, free yourself from suffering, and have the good life, it can also make you enlightened. You can be an enlightened being. Such a being and such a great teaching, you cannot develop the faith, then I don't know what to do with you. In Cantonese, they say, zap sang. You go and look after yourself. Nobody can help you. So faith is very important. You must contemplate deep into his teaching and understand who he is, how unique a being, how special a being the Buddha is. That's why as a Buddhist, you are very fortunate. You should learn to cherish his teaching. You should learn to respect him and have gratitude towards him. Such a great being who sacrificed so much for humanity, for mankind, for living beings, through the eons and eons of cultivation. Then after that, virya is a very natural consequence. When your faith is there, you will go all out to cultivate his teaching. True or not? But you realize the importance of this teaching. Without this teaching, you are dead. Your life. And you are not serious about life, you don't bother or care about your life, then continue to be heedless. In the year 1971, like the introduction, when I read this Four Noble Truths, the first time I realized how important this teaching is, and nobody told me that. Then straight away, deep inside me, tell me, this is the one, no need to search already. And I go all out since that day to cultivate this teaching. So virya is spiritual zeal, tenacity to move in this direction, to cultivate this understanding. So when you have the faith and the spiritual zeal, you will cultivate sati automatically. Because this is what you need. You need to be aware, mindful, then stabilize it to become samadhi so that you can be heedful. Then when you have sati and samadhi, which is mindfulness and collectedness of mind, or the unwavering mind, you can see things as they are, not according to what your thought tell you, what your views, opinion, and conditioning from your memory tell you. That's how you see truth, see things as they are. Jnana dasana. When these two is in place, the consequence of it is wisdom. After seeing things as they are, you realize the truth, the wisdom, the understanding. That's how the teaching comes about. So develop spiritual faculty, the Buddha said, and avoid what? The opposite five is what? Five mental? Hindrance, very good. So avoid five mental hindrance. So this one, I will not write. I think this one you should know. These five is all in the text and in the book. Yeah? The word mental hindrance is very clear. It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness, and inner calmness. That's why you can never meditate if you have the mental hindrance. They will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. And I just run through the five. The first two are sensual desire and ill will. These are the duality. They are part of the three evil roots of greed and hatred. Okay? So whenever you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile, feel something, or think, or recall through memory or something, then you will stir your mind and react to it. Either you like it or you don't like it. That's why the Buddha said your pleasant sense experience and the unpleasant sense experience, or your like and dislike, these two are mental hindrance. So whenever you have mental hindrance, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. So when you meditate, don't be gullible. When people ask you to note pain, 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 ask yourself, what are you doing? You are creating dislike for that sensation. And there is a mental hindrance. When that mental hindrance comes, how can you be in the meditative state? Understand it so that you are not foolish. When you meditate, you develop awareness to be aware of it. Finish. Then don't label. So that these first two mental hindrances are not there. In fact, if you are mindful, you check throughout the day, you arise a lot of these first two mental hindrances, sensual desire and evil. Every moment of sense experience, you stir your mind, like and dislike, pleasure. Then you comment, you react to it, you become emotional. Sometimes you become fearful, especially now with all the coronavirus and all this thing. Then sometimes when you have first noble truth problem, you also react to it. So the Buddha said, if you continue throughout the day to create mental hindrance, then you will be heedless. You will never be heedful. True or not? Because this mental hindrance will make you heedless. So when you see all this, you have to think of way to overcome them. How do you overcome them? The Buddha said, don't fight them, don't suppress them, don't control them, don't do anything to them. Just let it be. Let it arise and understand them. That it is due to the lack of these five. When you lack these five, this one automatically is there. So sensual desire and ill will are two very powerful mental hindrances. The third one is sloth and torpor, lethargic mind, sleepy mind, the mind that is dull. Why are you in such state, having this mental hindrance? Because when you go to a lecture or you go to a class, the subject you don't understand, what happened to you? You feel boring, isn't it? You feel sleepy. Isn't it? That's why that sloth and torpor is the result of that. So when you meditate, you don't understand the importance of meditation, you don't see the importance of learning this teaching. So what do? You sit as so boring, cannot move, cannot think, cannot even talk. Some are so miserable, cannot even fart. Understand? You feel so shameful when you make such noise. When you go for meditation, is to train your mind, to be peaceful, to be happy, to develop the awareness and the calmness. But instead, you go there and become miserable. That's why I say, don't go there and torture yourself. Why should you torture yourself? Go for a silent walk. You feel better. You feel relaxed, and maintain awareness. No need to sit there like a robot. For one, when you don't understand why you sit, you're wasting your time. But when you understand, it's useful. So don't go and tell people, brother, you say, don't sit. That is not what I meant. Please. So the third mental hindrance is sloth and torpor. You know what is the fourth one? Fourth one a lot of people have. The Buddha said, when you are restless, when you are full of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, your mind is not at peace. Then how to meditate? The moment you come there, you sit, and you want to meditate, all these thoughts come back to you. These are wrong thoughts that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your inability to be peaceful. That's why it's a restlessness of mind. And how do people get into this mental hindrance? When you break precept, when you break society's rule, when you do things that is against the society's law, like when you commit CBT, when you steal, you deceive, you cheat on your spouse. That's why all those people who violate the precept, they have this worry, anxiety. And they project their thought. What happened if my wife come to know, or my husband come to know, or my boss come to know? All this is the cause of the fourth mental hindrance, restlessness of mind. Then the last one is doubt. When you don't have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, you doubt. Do lah that correct? Maybe wrong. I must look for another teacher. Look for another method, another technique. Why must you have doubt? Follow the essential Dhamma. And all this is not something very difficult. Do you agree? It's just very simple scientific fact. And it's very logical, easy to understand, nothing esoteric or mystical. Like you must have special past training, then only you can be in the meditative state. No! When you understand this, you can be in the meditative state straight away. So these five mental hindrances, you must be aware. The moment they are there, you have to take action. And the Buddha teach us five ways to overcome unwholesome thought, wrong thought. These are also essential Dhamma. So, five ways to overcome I use the word wrong, shorter, huh? Don't need so long, unwholesome. Wrong thought, action and speech. They are all in the teaching. The Buddha said, when you have wrong thought, let's say, you get angry, you have fear, you become violent. How are you going to overcome it? Huh? How are you going to overcome it? If it's a thought, the Buddha said you can apply the four right effort. Four right effort. Maybe I go through this right effort first. Because the other five is more related to meditation. So under the four right effort, the Buddha said, you can purify your thought process first. The first right thought is to develop understanding and awareness. When the wrong thought has arisen, let's say the anger, the lust, the craving, the deceitfulness, the selfishness, or the fear. Once you saw this mind state arise, he said, arise the first right effort to abandon it. Can you understand? Abandon it. And how to abandon it? Use the five ways. Always go back to these five. Yeah, this is meditative, especially the third and fourth way. Then the second right effort is you must have the wisdom, the initial wisdom and the understanding to prevent the arising of this unwholesome thought. At that one, you need to meditate. You need to develop the wisdom, first and second turning wisdom, the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. And that is also the other essential Dhamma. So I don't have enough space to write, I write here. Yoniso manasikara. So this is initial wisdom, born of first and second turning wisdom. So when you have developed that, and when you are mindful, you're aware that initial wisdom straight away, spontaneously will prompt you with the essential Dhamma. Sabbe sankara anicchang, sabbe sankara dukkang, and sabbe Dhamma anatta. Straight away, the defilement ceases. The wrong thought ceases, everything ceases, because you have wisdom, right view. So that wisdom is the three universal characteristics. Three universal characteristics of nature. So there are a lot of essential Dhamma. This one is anicchang, dukkang, anatta. Then the other third and fourth right effort is to cultivate wholesome thought. He said, whatever wholesome thought, virtue, or goodness of mind state, they are still not in you. Like metta, loving kindness, generosity, contentment, respect, sincerity, truthfulness. All this wholesomeness, virtue, if they are still not in you, arise the right effort to cultivate it. Reflect and contemplate what constitutes right thought, right speech, right action, then cultivate it. Then the last one is, arise the last forthright effort to refine upon whatever right thought, right speech, right effort that you have developed and perfect it so that you become beautiful. But most books, under the fourth one, they say maintain. You ask yourself, if you maintain, will you improve? Will you improve if you maintain? Improve, isn't it? Maintain means those people kiasu one, they scared, they forgot. Understand? That's why they want to maintain. It's just like our Chinese tradition. You know what is Chinese tradition? Oh, thank you so much. Oh, I need this second Bible. You know Chinese tradition, we believe one. Whatever business you do, first generation, you are successful, then the saying is what? That wealth will not last beyond three generations. You heard of it, no? Why? Because the first generation worked very hard, go all out, take risks and build it up. Second generation, no need to work already. Enough for you for the next two generations. So what they do? You maintain enough. Maintain. You go and maintain. That's why it will be gone. Because you have to train them up. Train them up means pass them the understanding and the skill so that they can do it and grow and become better than you. That's why you have to refine upon the right thought, right speech, right action, and perfect that. That is what cultivation is all about. Okay. So now, I will go into these five ways. Those who already meditate before or understand the teaching will know. What is the first way? The Buddha said, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. When you have anger, think of what? When you have anger, think of what? Metta, isn't it? Loving kindness, isn't it? When you have metta, loving kindness, you cannot get angry, true or not? So that is the first way. But the first way doesn't help much. Maybe temporary. Understand? It's not a solution. Because after you think of the direct opposite wholesome thought, you radiate love, radiate metta, and then you become peaceful. You come out, meet somebody again, nasty one, you react again, you get angry. So every time go back and think of the opposite wholesome thought. It's not a solution. And the Buddha said, if that is the case, the second step will help you. The second step is what? Think of the consequence of holding on to that evil root, that wrong thought, that anger, the hatred. Because these are evil root of greed, hatred, and delusion. If you have them in your mind state, what happened to you? You become evil. Do you understand? Because these are evil roots, roots of all evil. When you become evil, your karmic nature will fall. You will create a lot of wrong things. You will break the precept. You will violate the nature's law. That's how you suffer. So when you think of the consequence of this and your life, you don't want to have that evil karma, you better wake up and determine to come out of it. That's how the second way to overcome unwholesome thought is to have that determination to come out of it. And then he teaches you the third way, the Buddha said. The third way is the meditative way. Very simple, is it? Don't do anything. Next time when you get angry, just silent. That's how you have to learn to meditate. You learn to develop the ability to relax and maintain awareness within. Silent. Relax, aware, finish. Then when you don't give it any more wrong thought, don't give it any more wrong thought energy, what happened to the anger? The anger will slowly dissipate and cease to be. You go and try. When you realize that you have wisdom, you will understand. Then you will come to the understanding as taught by the Buddha. The Buddha said the five aggregate of form and mind is not real, not you. It's impermanent. When you attach and grasp and cling, it leads to suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can grasp onto, hold onto, cling onto, and say, this is me, this is I. That's why you will understand all this. So what are the five aggregates of form and mind? Rupa, the first aspect, is our physical body. That one I have gone through in the earlier talk. Second one is feeling, Vedana. I also have taught before. Third one is perception, also same. The fourth one is Sankara. This one, Sankara, the meaning is very deep. There are four or five English words. Mental intention, mental states, mental formation, then your mental conception. Whatever that your mind can do is Sankara. So mental states are your state of mind. Anger is one of them. Fear is one of them. Sorrow and lamentation is also one of them. So when this Sankara arises, the Buddha says, it is anicchang, impermanent. How do you understand it? That's why I use the third way. Silence your mind. Don't do anything. Relax. Then when you see it dissipate, you understand. Anger come and go. I didn't die. So how can anger be me? If anger is not me, then I reflect on it, trace back the fourth way. Trace back the origination factor. How did I get angry? How did my mind stir? Before I was angry, there was no anger. So anger is dependent on condition. It's either when you see something you don't like, hear something you don't like, or when you recall something that is fearful, your scars or memory or your phobia, then fear arises. Then, or you recall something that people have done to you, you get angry with him. So these are conditioned arising mental state. Fear, anger, and all the various emotions, they are dependent originating, conditioned arising. They are not intrinsic within your true mind. They are not real. They are impermanent. That's why when you start to see this, when you trace the origination factor, then you realize this is impermanent. They come and they go. This is not me. So it's delusion when I think otherwise. When I attach, I cling. So in the meditation, you will see this, then you come to the understanding. When you reflect and you contemplate, all along, it is due to stupidity. That's why a lot of cultivator meditators, especially after they go for retreat many, many rounds, they come out, they think they already realize they have certain progress, and maybe they believe they enlighten. Then the Buddha say, if you break the first five fetters, including sensual desire and ill will, you cannot get angry already. Then suddenly, for no reason, one day, some conditions stir his anger. Then he say, I still have anger. Do you know what the mistake is or not? I still have anger, which means he think anger is him. Anger belongs to him. Then how can you be enlightened? Do you understand? You're supposed to see the opposite. Anger was never you. Fear was never you. Then why did you stir your mind? Well, you lack right view. You lack understanding. When you understand all this, the meditation frees you. You only need to accept the reality of the moment. Think it's just the way it is. Condition like that, things will be like that. Living being also same. Deluded being say deluded thing. Angry person do angry things. Selfish people do selfish things. They are just the way they are. So I can see things as they are and I am at peace. I don't have to stir my mind. That is wisdom. That is meditation. That's why the third way and the fourth way is the best. really solve your problem. Then you don't have to every time get angry, go back and think of the direct opposite wholesome state, or the consequence. No need. Finish. The last one, do you know what is it? The Buddha said, if all the first four he has taught you, especially the third and fourth, you still cannot understand, then he said, I cannot do anything to help you. You have to do it yourself. He said, with tongue against the palate, determined to abandon it yourself. Yeah, the Buddha has taught you the best way to meditate and you still don't want to learn and cannot do it. You have to do it yourself. So these are the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. Thank you. Suyan has helped me to write down the five mental hindrances. Then after that, you still have your other essential Dhamma. Okay. You still have your seven factors of enlightenment. Maybe somebody help me to write that. I don't have to write the seven factor. Who wants to help? English. English sure no one. So, four foundation of mindfulness. Because the essential Dhamma are actually very comprehensive for you to develop the understanding of the teaching and also to develop the awakening. I read for you now. Sati. Okay, you just copy from there. Okay. So these seven factors of enlightenment are factors of enlightenment. When you meditate correctly, they will arise. If you say you have already become enlightened and you check hardly any factor of enlightenment around, then please go and check your enlightenment. Because for you to really become enlightened, the factors of enlightenment keep on arising. Then this one, Avijja Sutta. The 10th step. Also very important essential Dhamma. So seven factor of enlightenment is step 9 of Avijja Sutta. The moment you see the enlightenment factor coming, you will come to understand that you are already on the right path. Enlightenment in the here and the now will be possible. You will definitely awaken. Okay? So the first factor of enlightenment according to the Buddha is Sati. That's why mindfulness is very important. Sati is very important. For sati is life. Without sati, there is no life. Why? Without sati, there is no mindfulness. Without mindfulness, you cannot be ever mindful. You cannot be heedful. And the heedless are as if dead. That's why there is no life. But if you have sati, you develop it and you can stabilize it to be ever mindful, leading to heedfulness, then sati is life. Then when you have sati, you can be very sensitive. You can investigate the Buddha's teaching, investigate all the Dhamma he has shared with us, the essential Dhamma. Then when they stand up to investigation, your faith is there. That's why that faith will drive you through virya, second factor of enlightenment. That's why virya is, Dhamma vichaya is second factor of enlightenment. Where you investigate in Dhamma, then it stand up to investigate, your faith is there, then it will drive you to cultivate. So virya is the third factor of enlightenment. Okay? So once virya is there, your sati will stabilize, your anapanasati or whatever method and technique you use will stabilize, then what happens? You will experience pity. Pity is a spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, effective enlightenment. That's why that is your fourth enlightenment factor. Then when you continue to relax and silence your mind, piti will transform. It can become more refined to become sukhang. But sukhang is not an enlightenment factor. That's why the Buddha didn't put it there. Sukhang is blissfulness of mind. Those who do concentration jhana, they experience them. Those who do awareness one, most of the time, you don't really experience them much. Even you experience just for the short moment, and you will not attach. Then you continue to relax and silent until your sati becomes so quiet and so still, then you hit pasati. Pasati is tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, means the mind enters sati. The mind has no more movement. The mundane mind is still. That is pasati. Then when you stabilize that pasati until in the midst of life also you are able to be in that state, then samadhi will develop. And with samadhi, your mind is collected, unwavering. That's why you can cultivate sati sampajana, daily mindfulness, with clear comprehension. Because your mind is already stable. Every moment of sense experience, the samadhi will prevent your mind from stirring through delusion. And because of that, that enlightenment factor will allow you to see things as they are, to awaken to the truth. That's what wisdom is all about. And when wisdom comes in, the last enlightenment factor, upekkha, will arise. That's why you have the seven factors of enlightenment all there. Sati, which is mindfulness or awareness before the knowing. Then Dhamma Vichaya is investigation of Dhamma. Virya, spiritual zeal. Piti, spiritual calmness or spiritual joy or rapture. Then you have pasati, tranquility of mind or stillness of mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind. This is the one. Then you have samadhi, the unwavering and collected mind. Then upekkha, equanimity, born of wisdom. That's how it happened. Then under the avijja sutta, this is most important. Avijja is ignorant. Sutta on ignorance. The Buddha mentioned under this sutta, he said there are two sequence in the sutta. One is the enlightenment sequence, how you can develop it and become enlightened. The other sequence is how you fall, how through delusion you get yourself into trouble. So we are more interested in which sequence, enlightenment sequence. How you fall, you already know. Because most of the time you are heedless, that's why you follow the ignorant sequence. So avijja, paccaya, sankhara, everything. Then the enlightenment sequence is very easy, the Buddha say. I better write this time. The last one already. He said the first step, avijja sutta have 10 steps. This one, the ink is more prominent. So this 10 step, the Buddha say, everybody can do, and it's very easy. First step, you all have. You must have kayanamitta. Means spiritual friends. Spiritual or Dhamma friends. So once you have Dhamma friends or kayanamitta, then the step two is a natural consequence. Step two is opportunity to listen to true Dhamma. like what you are doing now. Okay? So this first two steps is very important. And this one, step two, is the most important. When you listen to the Dhamma, a lot of things happen. It is a meritorious action, true or not? You straighten your view after you listen, another meritorious action. Then you share merit, you transfer merit, another meritorious action. So listening to the Dhamma is very useful. Then you can also arise the first and second turning wisdom. I covered before under the talk, three turning of the Four Noble Truths. First turning wisdom is listening. When you listen to the teaching or the sutta as proclaimed by the Buddha, then when you understand and awaken, it will lead to the first turning wisdom called suttamayapanya, means wisdom born of hearing the sutta. Okay? That's why this one is very important. Then after that, after you develop the first turning, if you still not awaken, then you can reflect on it, contemplate on it, inquire. Why did the Buddha say all this? How can I understand all this? Then you develop the contemplative wisdom, which is Chintamaya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Wisdom born of reflection and contemplation on the Dhamma. So when you constantly listen to Dhamma, develop the first and second turning wisdom, then develop all the wholesomeness, then when you put it into cultivation, the Dhamma stand up to investigation, you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching. So the third step is faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then the fourth step is the initial wisdom. So this initial wisdom is what we call Yoniso Manasikara. Once this Yoniso Manasikara is there, you become different. When you have this initial wisdom, at the moment of sense experience, this one will prompt you. Then you will not get angry. You will not develop fear. You will not stir your mind. That's why the mental hindrance is hardly there. Then most of the time you are at peace. Because you don't react and you don't stir. You don't create unnecessary thinking and duality. So when that initial wisdom comes into play, then it's easier for you to develop the daily mindfulness. That's why step five is sati sampajana. One M or two M? One M. One J. One or two? One. So this sati is mindfulness and clear comprehension. So this one is mindfulness and clear comprehension. Clear comprehension. Because when your initial wisdom is there, you will have more moment of peace, more moment of silence, more moment of space between thought. That's why you can be in the state of sati in the midst of life. That's how this sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension in the midst of life, daily mindfulness, become possible. When you are so mindful in the midst of life, you cannot break precept. True or not? Where you are aware. And the initial wisdom will prompt you. That's why it cannot arrive. That's what I was trying to tell you just now, the second right effort to prevent the arising of the unwholesome thought. It can happen after that. Otherwise, it cannot happen. That's why the sixth step is what? Huh? The sixth step is sense restraint. And this one is very important. Once you have sense restraint, means you cannot break your precept anymore. True or not? Huh? Because you see your intention and the initial wisdom come out, prevent you from reacting and stirring your mind. So how can you break your precept? You can't. So sense restraint, at this stage, you are at least a sotapan. That's why sotapan onward, you cannot break your five precepts. It's mentioned in the sutta too. Then step seven is what? After you have sense restraint, means you cannot arise any evil. You can only arise what? Wholesome thought. Right action. Right speech. Right thought. That's why you can have the three way of right conduct, the Buddha said. After this only, the Buddha said, you can do your four foundation of mindfulness. Of mindfulness. That's why when you finish step six and seven, you are most probably at least a Sakadagami. That's the reason why after that, the step 8, the Buddha said, once you do step 8, your realization is at least anagami, third stage of sainthood. And if there is no more very subtle, they call it the 10 fetters, the very subtle type of manatma, you will become an arahant. And the other reason is also, in the Satipatthana Sutta, you have to read the opening statement. Of course, after the Ekayano Bhikkhave Bhikkhu, when they start off with the four foundations of mindfulness, they always say, after overcoming covetousness and grief, then only you start cultivating the four foundations of mindfulness. What is covetousness and grief? Sensual desire and ill will, the fourth and fifth factor. That's why you must break that one. Means you must be at least a Sakadagami. Otherwise you cannot cultivate. Otherwise when you cultivate, not much meaning. You are not ready actually. Yeah. But once you have the first and second stage of enlightenment realized, means Sotapannaship and Sakadagami, then you are ready. And when you are ready, fourth foundation of mindfulness is very easy. Because you will understand automatically after your training of 4, 5, 6, 7. Then when you do the fourth foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha says step 7 is the 7 factors of enlightenment. You will keep on seeing the 7 factors of enlightenment. And they will tell you that you are on the right path. That's why all these essential Dhamma are very clear, very clearly stated in the teaching. And the last one is enlightenment in the here and the now. Enlightenment in the here and the now. That's how the whole Avijja Sutta is to be understood. Okay? So with this, I will end my talk today. Thank you.
Oh, everybody understand.
Ah, yes, there is one.
Brother Teo, thank you very much for sharing. So much to absorb. Now the thing is, more or less I understand what you're trying to relate, most of the things. More on a mundane level, because I also read quite a lot of Dharma books and all that. So initially it was very tough, very puzzling, very confused. But as I keep on going through the books, again I repeat again the Four Noble Truths, I read again the Four Noble Truths and the Eight Noble Truths, slowly it comes, and then when I put on my practice, slowly this thing come off, kind of align itself, you know. So I become much clearer now. Now, I had a thought a few days ago. I was thinking that Buddha's been teaching us about birth, old age, sickness and death and things like that. So that reminds me that whether you like it or not, whether you're prepared or not, one day we have to go to that direction, right? To move on. Now, I told my missus that actually, Buddha talk about cycle of samsara. Actually, we are right now in samsara, because due to ignorance, we are in samsara now. So we are so fortunate that we are born as a human being and not maybe an animal or whatever. So there's nothing wrong with being born an animal, but then we are so fortunate to be born as a human.
Do you have any particular question?
Yes, the question right now is, I want to come to it, is that the body is just the body itself. We will leave behind. But what you have mentioned is that you're talking about consciousness, or we relate it to mindfulness, that is our mind. So if we have slowly but surely get rid of all this karma, then our mind will be much purer, more purified, and then we will land into a very good destination. I hope you can enlighten me on this.
I understand your question.
Am I getting it right?
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
I will answer your question. Very good. Thank you for the good question. So first of all, I would like to correct is you cannot get rid of your karma. Please understand that. The karmic nature, you cannot finish off your karma. You can only realize enlightenment so that karma has no more power over you, because there is no more ignorance to condition rebirth. But in the higher teaching, there are more things. Even though you are enlightened, let's say arahantship, for most Theravada people or Theravada tradition, they believe that's it, finish. Arahant, no more rebirth. That's it. That's why karma got no more power over them. But they also mention, when you realize arahantship, if there is condition for your heavy karma to arise, it will still arise. That's why during the Buddha's time, there are many arahant, if not at least two. They were gored to death. By, was it a cow or what? I forgot already. Immediately after they become arahant, they go out and try to get the rope, they were killed. That aspect is Theravada tradition. But under the Mahayana tradition, or those who understand, you can still continue to come back, even if you are an arahant, that line. That's what Sakyamuni did. when he met Dipankara Buddha, who gave him the prediction that he will become a Sammasambuddha in the distant future, which is 2600 years ago. So at that time, he actually realized arahantship. But because before that, he already had the understanding to go that way. That's why he take the vow to cultivate until he becomes Sammasambuddha. So the Bodhisattva way which he took was seldom taught. Or there is not much detail as to how to develop the cultivation. But it seems the Mahayana received those cultivation while he was preaching to the mother and also the great beings up there while he was in the, was it the Tusita heaven? Oh, Tawatinsa heaven. So that teaching came from there. He was up there preaching for 3 months. And Long Su Pusa, Nagarjuna, was up there listening. And he was like Ananda, elephant memory. That's why he committed to memory and passed it down to the patriarch. So from Kasapa, the lineage went over to India under Bodhidharma. That's why Bodhidharma started the tradition of Mahayana and the Bodhisattva way was explained. That's how later on the six patriarch, Hui Ning and all those things come. So as a living being or a human being, even you are an arahant, technically, which is correct, no more rebirth based on ignorance. Listen, technically, the Theravada is also correct. No more rebirth due to ignorance. But they don't understand rebirth based on non-ignorance. That's why the Mahayana has this understanding and they can do it because they develop one vow, which is a Bodhisattva vow that is very powerful. They vow to liberate the limitless living being in samsara. And that vow is born of what? Love and compassion. No more ignorance. So what happened is, if you don't have the understanding and the training beyond the arahantship or sainthood way, you can never understand. Because we have a karmic nature which is still there. Even arahants still have the karmic nature. But because they got no more ignorance, the last thought moment when they die, it doesn't condition rebirth consciousness. That's why they cannot come, it cease, finish. But Bodhisattva who has the understanding out of love and compassion for the living being, they make that vow, it becomes nature's law. That's why that love and compassion mind will arise. Because there is a vow. It has become a nature's law. Then this karmic nature can condition rebirth. That's why they can come. That's why Sakyamuni came. 3¾ asankhaya kapal and he continued his cultivation to perfect the 10 perfection to become Sammasambuddha. Then your earlier question was, you talk about birth, old age, sickness and death, isn't it? Then you understand that this body will go the way of nature. And you more or less understand this is not you. But when you really meditate and develop the understanding, which I think you are in the process leading to that, what I heard you say is true. Last time you find it so difficult, like the Dhamma is so extensive, very confusing. But nobody can link it to you, can summarize it to you. That's why you say you read a lot. Remember? You read a lot. And because you read a lot, you start to develop better understanding. Then after that, you try to meditate. Then they sort of become like more and more aligned. Then you start to develop some sense of accomplishment or progress. But you still cannot understand the true teaching, because true teaching is not based on thought-based meditation. It's based on understanding the true mind, the silent mind, and to realize the enlightenment factors. You have to follow Avijja Sutta, otherwise it's not easy. Avijja Sutta is very important. So you think birth, always sickness and death is a common phenomenon which is true. Like you say, you told your wife. The Buddha called it the reality of life and existence. If you live long enough, you will confront this first noble truth, eight realities of not only birth, always sickness and death. Separation from loved one, prized possession, when you are with people whom you don't like, when you cannot get what you want. And in short, the final summary, it is due to your self-delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto the five aggregate of form and mind, upadana khandas, that he called dukkha. That final summary, you have to develop the understanding, and you can only develop it through meditation. You must understand what constitute the five aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects. Then put it to test. If I grasp to them, what happens? Do I suffer? Then when you awaken to that through meditation, the five way, especially the third and fourth way, then your Avijja Sutta, you will reach step four. What you have done is, you have been constantly listening to the Dhamma, but you didn't do enough reflection and contemplation. Then you didn't go into the stability of initial wisdom to develop sati sampajana. You missed these few steps. Your faith in the Buddha and his teaching also not that stable and strong, because you lack certain understanding. But you have progressed. Okay? So what happened is, after you have realized the awakening of the three universal characteristics, especially the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, then you will understand like what the Buddha say. The Buddha asked the monk under the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. He said, monk, is the body self? What did the monk reply? The monk say, I don't know. Your to them is like self. Understand? Like now I ask you, is your body really self? Belongs to you? The Buddha helped them actually. He said, the Buddha clearly mentioned, the body is not self. For if it's self, you will have control over it. It will not tend towards suffering. It will not go the way of nature. Do you understand? It will not get old, get sick and die. You can tell the body, don't get old, don't get sick, don't die. But it doesn't listen to you. That's why it's not self. So the Buddha's teaching is very unique. There are three Pali words. One is atta, self. One is attaniya, completely no self. That's why you read through my essential Dhamma, the brown book, I think today I brought some too. There is a question by Sister Engby. He asked me that question, which is very good. He said, why Brother Teo always say non-self? Not self. The Buddha didn't accept atta and attaniya, self and no self. He said. He said the truth is, it is anatta. Are you going to read the answer inside that I give to Engby on very clear? Because he said, it's not no self, nothingness. No, there is something. But that something is non-self. Understand not? Is it confusing? That's why you have to meditate to understand. Then he asked the monk again, he said, is your body permanent or impermanent? Ah, this one the monk know. He said, Lord, it's impermanent. Because they saw the body getting old, eh? Decay, getting sickness and all those things on itself. Then he said, very good. Then why are you so foolish? The Buddha asked them. If the body is not self, it tends towards suffering and is impermanent, is it right to say that this body is permanent? This is me. This is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. Straight away, all the five become arahant. That is the power of Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. The Sutta on non-self. That's why the Buddha explained. Is the body self? Atta. The Buddha don't agree. If it's self, atta, it will not tend towards suffering. Where you have control. Is the body attaniya? Means no self, completely empty, nothing. But we know that, like you say, we go through life, that we have used this body. That's why the Buddha said, no, it's anatta, in between. That's why he said, you're not supposed to deludedly say it's self. Then you attach. Then the personality, egoic mind arise. Then you become selfish, you become egoic. You can become angry, violent, fearful. The three evil roots come out. That is self-delusion. That conditions you to attach, cling, and grasp onto this five aggregate of form and mind. So the five aggregate of form and mind is another essential Dhamma, the two aspects. I didn't write it here. Maybe I write it in. The five aggregate of form and mind. This one has two aspects. You go and read my book, the Heart Sutta is all there. So once you understand Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, then you will awaken. The Buddha after that continued with feeling, he repeat the same. With perception, he repeat the same. Then with Sankara, he repeat the same. With Vijnanang, consciousness, he repeat the same. Then after that, the monk, all become arahant. But I got something to add to Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Instead of making it so complicated, you can understand it more simple. The Buddha's way is actually very clear, very good, but not easy for you all to understand. Because it has this no self, self, no self, oh sorry, self, no self, and non-self. Very complicated. We use simple logic, or simple, what we call day-to-day understanding. Ask yourself this body, is it really you? Is without consciousness, what is this body? Make up of four elements, isn't it? Go the way of nature, isn't it? So how can it be you? True or not? Without the consciousness, it can never be you. Understand? Can follow or not? Well, this one also cannot follow, then cannot continue. Can follow that? Very easy, right? Make a four element, no consciousness inside, definitely it's not you. That's why you go the way of nature. Then it's feeling you. The Buddha says, if feeling is self, it will not tend towards suffering. That one more difficult to understand, isn't it? I have an easier way. What is feeling? Feeling arise and pass away. That's why one moment that feeling can be pleasant, the next moment unpleasant. If feeling is you, did you die? You didn't die, right? So how can feeling be you? Perception come and go, you didn't die. How can it be you? Mental state, sankhara, emotion, everything come and go, you didn't die. Consciousness appear and disappear, you didn't die. So how can it be you? Easier, isn't it? True or not? Then You have to understand. If it's not in you, then ask yourself, why does it arise within your form and mind? Then the question is, who are you? What are you? If they are not you, you have to find out that which is you. That's why you have a nature inside, your true nature, your Buddha nature. That which is eternal, the unconditioned. Meditation is to realize that and go beyond the conditioned world, the form and mind. That is what enlightenment is all about. That is what the teaching is all about. Okay? I hope I have answered your question. Huh? Okay? Thank you. Use the mic. No. Cannot hear. The recording cannot hear. For the recording, please. It's not to say we want to record your voice. It's for the other people who are not here.
I'm quite curious because we are talking about, you're talking about non-self, no-self and so on. It's easy to talk, but then it's not easy to really deeply understand. Because when we leave this body, the four elements will go off, right? But the last to go, what I understand is that it's the mind, or the, we call it the consciousness. So only when your consciousness and the mind goes off, that's the last one. Then that's we know that we don't have the self there, you see. But as long as we have our mind, our consciousness, we have it with us.
So you believe,
tendency to feel that we,
I asked you a question first. So you believe after you die, your consciousness come out, this consciousness take rebirth. Is that what you are trying to tell me? That's why you have to meditate to understand. Otherwise, you will continue to have this question. Mm-hmm. You are confused because you think the mind is real. The mind is permanent. The Buddha already said the five aggregates of form and mind is impermanent. If you deludedly grasp and cling, thinking that it's you, is real, you suffer. Upadana khandas. Realize that in the meditation, so that all this doubt is gone. So that all your questions that come from the thought, which is still not enlightened, will not create doubt for you. Do you understand? Maybe to let you understand further, I will explain further. Then you will understand. What is death? Who died? What died? Isn't that more interesting to you? Huh? What is death? I ask again. Who died? What died? Isn't this question interesting? Do you want to understand? You want to understand? Okay, now I tell you. The Buddha said no one died. Why? Because this five aggregate of form and mind is karmically conditioned out for you to come to this world. It's impermanent. Lead to suffering. Because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity. It's empty, non-self, not real, not what you think. So that is the first aspect. That's why no one died. Death is just separation of the consciousness from the form. Other religions say there is a soul that come out. And this soul is permanent. It will continue and take rebirth. The Buddha said no. The one that conditioned rebirth is the last thought moment. It's all in the teaching. But you never want to understand. The last thought moment determines your rebirth. Remember? Then where got soul? This consciousness that come out is the random. Since birth until now, when you are a baby, this brain got nothing, not much thing. And because of that, the baby is very naive, very cute. That's why you can see they are very naive, very cute. Then as they grow up, human being, the parent, out of the word they think that is love, teach them and condition them into a lot of delusion. Teach them words. Papa, mama, then teach them knowledge. Go to school, oh no, upon birth, give them a name. After birth, the name goes into the birth certificate. After birth certificate, go to school, you have an IC. After IC, you give you a passport. Everything identify you. That's why your attachment to this form and mind become very strong. You believe you are real, you exist. That's how the baby become like that. Then they go through life, develop all the emotion, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow, the lamentation, the knowledge, then the religion, believe in God, don't believe in God. Why do you have to confuse yourself until you are so miserable? The teaching is so scientific and so clear, why can't you understand? Do you need a permanent soul or a God to create thinking? To see, to hear, to smell, to taste, to tactile feel and experience life? You don't need. The Buddha said these are all nature's law. That's why the law of mind. Citta niyama, how you function. This is mind, the mundane mind. Then there is a true mind, the true nature. That's why the Buddhist teaching don't need a God, don't need anything. Everything is nature's law. You think God created everything? When I don't want to use the word analyzer. When I investigate into it, I realize nothing is created. Everything I come to experience comes through nature's law. Will you agree with me that we are all born from our mother's womb? Which one of you is created by God? Tell me. Then you talk about the first cause. Without an almighty, how can things arise? Now you check with scientists. From the singularity, the source, everything come to be, the expanding universe, the Big Bang. You don't need anything. You only need to understand the conditioned world and the unconditioned world. That's why the Buddhist meditation is very profound, very, very deep in its understanding and meaning. So unless you meditate and awaken and realize, you can never understand the truth. So be patient. Huh? Don't worry. Whatever you think, it's just like when you are young, when you don't know anything. A lot of things you believe in finally turn out to be wrong, isn't it? Yeah, you evolve, isn't it? Like when we were young, because we don't understand. When there is thunder, the primitive man say what? God is angry. Do you agree God is angry? Then the religious book say, let there be light, there is light. But the scientists know day and night is not created. It's through nature's formation. The planet on its axis rotate, created the day and night. So investigate and find out, don't believe. Don't be gullible. Meditate and understand what really happened. The amount of inquiry or question that I have given you is good enough for you to investigate in. Not until you understand all those, you can never understand who are you, what are you. Yeah. Last time I spoke the preliminary understanding, there's a green book, Who Are You, What Are You? I go and read. That one will give you some very good initial understanding. It explains the karmic nature, the spiritual nature, the form and mind, and the true mind. So all these are there. You read through slowly, then meditate. Then when you have the condition to realize, you will understand. Otherwise, it's not easy. Okay? Thanks for your question. Anyway, sadhu.
Okay, Brother Sister Dharma, let's give Brother Teo a big sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Just give me a minute, Ingbi has helped. This is the book on the essential Dharma of Lord Buddha. So a lot of the thing I share today actually start from this book, where I find this book very useful. And your question, there's a question and answer at the back. I think the first question, Engby asked three questions, I remember, and they are very good. That will solve your question. It will let you understand. He asked about why Brother Teo every time use the word non-self and not no-self. Is that? Then this one is what I mentioned just now. Who are you? What are you? If feeling, perception, sankhara and vijnana are not you, then why do they arise in you? Then who are you? What are you? You have to meditate to realize that. Okay? It's all shared here. Eh? Then there are other books at the back. Eh? If you want, you can collect them afterwards. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, Brother and Sister Dharma, to end the session, let's pay homage to the Triple Gem. Buddhang Pujemi. Dhammang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Thank you, Brother Sister Dharma. Have a safe
trip.
You
want to share the merits? Share merits. We will do a simple one. Akasatta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva cirang rakantu loka sasana ittavata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo devo asatu kalena sasa sampati hetu ca fito bhavatu loko ca raja bhavatu dhamiko ikmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu Yāvā nivāna pātiyā sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay, thank you. Pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Then we end. Thank you.
Okay, brothers, this is before we go, please help me to...